You're tuned in to WESU Middletown, 88.1 FM, all the way to the left on your dial.
And right now, you're listening to Horizontal Power Hour, your source for anarchist thought, culture, and politics. We're today's hosts, Mika Taliaferro and Isabel Gauthier.
On today's show, we'll start out with our usual roundup of indie media news from around the world. Then we'll air an interview with Linda Oalakin, community organizer from Damayon, Filipino Migrant and Immigrant Workers Association.
We'll get to all that momentarily, but first we want to note that Horizontal Power Hour is planned and produced by a collective called the Dream Committee. While we are continuously constructing our own process for making decisions and for creating our show, we have a basic model we work under. At present, we're made up of 8 members of differing perspectives, backgrounds, and interests, and we share in the process of planning, producing, and broadcasting the show every other week. Members meet regularly to discuss and evaluate our process and ensure that all decisions we make are consented by the entire group. We focus our attention on the process of our own group, both with the goal of eliminating hierarchy and coercion internally and with the conviction that ultimately our politics are not about a distant idyllic future, but about recreating the world around us right now. Each episode is hosted and produced by self-selected members of the collective on a rotating basis. For more information, email us at horizontalpowerhour@wesufm.org.
If you're looking for Indigenous politics, don't be alarmed. The Horizontal Power Hour airs on the second and fourth Tuesday of each month at 4 p.m. and alternates with Indigenous politics from Native New England and beyond, which airs on the first, third, and fifth Tuesday of each month at 4 p.m. as usual.
We'd also like to remind listeners that the views expressed on the show are our own and in no way reflect the views and opinions of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. For that matter, what we present here doesn't even represent the Anarchist Radio Collective in its entirety.
We'll be right back with our action news after a brief song.
That I'm a dreamer, for the things I feel and see, or that nothing can be accomplished from the things I wish to be. Tell me not that I'm fanatic, for the things I feel inside, they are flowers of oppression, born of pain I cannot hide. Do not look upon my actions as the acts of one insane, when I take up modern weapons to avenge my father's name. Let your eyes scan all the ghettos through the books of history. Then you'll understand this feeling and just how it came to be. Sure, I must admit I'm bitter for the precious blood I've bled and for the years of cruel oppression that you've heaped upon my head. For the rape of my grandmothers and the mulattoes that you have left. For the many, 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 many years of slavery with his legacy of death. Tell me not that I'm a dreamer. Oh no, it's you that cannot see. I'm just another victim of a cruel reality. What manner of man is this, I ask, who roams the seven seas, who graces the skies and birds of on and wanders where he please, who walks into another's home and takes his property, then slays the man, his wife, and child in the name of liberty? What manner of beast is this, I ask, who drops the napalm from the skies, then send my sons away to war to maim and kill and die? What manner of man is this, I ask, who arrogantly displays his might? What manner of man is this, my friend? Needless to say, he's white. So take your hands off of me, white folks. I've done you no wrong. I'm only guilty of making you strong. I've built all of your cities, and I've worked in your mines. I've fought to protect you many a time. It was I who taught you what it is to be brave. I had great civilizations when you lived in caves. I taught you what soap was when you dyed yourselves blue. I taught you planting and harvesting too. I I showed you what clothes were to cover your backs when you were in wolf skins and running in packs. When you knew nothing of the barrier of sound, it was I who taught you that this planet was round. In Palermo, Sicily, and Italy, and Spain, I left monuments of my grandeur and fame. And during your dark ages, when your people were blind, I built universities to enlighten your kind. When your homeland was weak and your people were poor, it was I who brought you to America's shore. While you did not even know how to survive, I showed you medicine to keep you alive. How earnest you seemed, how well you did learn, how vile the reward I received in return. But time is on my side. I'm sure you must know that the day will arrive when you'll reap what you sow. For I gave you religion, and you know it's a fact that the Christ and the Buddha and Muhammad were black. I taught you to dance, and I taught you to sing. You repaid me with treachery, with slavery and chains. So don't touch me, Whitey, and don't look surprised. No, I'm no longer fooled by your tricks and your lies. I'm aware of your game and of your history, and I'm aware of the Judas that you have been to me. So watch out for me, white folks. It's a matter of time. I'll soon be together. Then vengeance is mine.
You just heard Before the White Man Came by The Last Poets.
You're listening to WESU Middletown, 88.1 FM, all the way to the left of your dial. And this is Horizontal Power Hour, your source for anarchist thought, culture, and politics.
Now we bring you Action News, your alternative source for news from around the world.
As Occupy movements have transformed business as usual in the U.S., in Greece, riot police in Athens have fired tear gas against masked youth during a march by tens of thousands of Greeks protesting austerity measures demanded by the new unity government. Police said 27,000 people in Athens and 15,000 in the second city of Thessalonica joined demonstrators marking a 1973 student uprising seen as a key moment in the restoration of democracy in Greece nearly four decades ago. "We will throw all of them out," promised a banner held aloft by students in Athens, while another carried by anarchists read, "In the face of tyranny, one must choose between chains and arms." Thursday's march, the first test of the scale of public defiance against the coalition set up to deal with Greece's crippling debt crisis, was a somber, largely peaceful affair, although violence flared briefly during the afternoon. A group of protesters threw stones and two firebombs at police outside Parliament, while a dozen masked youths set two large dustbins alight outside police headquarters near the U.S. Embassy, police said. The annual March of November 17th commemorates a student uprising at the Athens Polytechnic in 1973, which was violently repressed. At least 44 people died, but it helped topple a U.S.-backed army dictatorship and brought back the republic. The blood-stained Greek flag that flew over the university that night is carried at the head of the demonstration each year.
And in Italy, students have clashed with police around Italy in protests against budget cuts, while transport strikes halted buses and trains. The clashes came as Premier Mario Monti prepared to unveil his anti-crisis strategy ahead of a confidence vote in his day-old government. Police in riot gear scuffled with students in Milan, where they planned to march to Bocconi University, which forms Italy's business elite. "The government of the banks," read one placard held by a youth marching in the protest in Milan. In Palermo, Sicily, demonstrators hurled eggs and smoke bombs at a bank, and protesters threw rocks at police who battled back with pepper sprays. One protester was injured in the head in Palermo, where police charged demonstrators who were trying to occupy another bank.
An animal liberation group in Brazil has claimed responsibility for breaking into the campus of Santa Catarina Federal University in Florianapolis, Brazil, and burning a new animal research building to house goats, dogs, mice, and birds to be used in experiments. They dedicated their action to the recent release of American Kevin Jonas, who had served years in federal prison for his nonviolent agitation against the infamous animal testing corporation Huntington Life Sciences.
Last month, some arson-inclined anarchists lit armored money transport trucks belonging to Cervico Panamerico Money Handling Corporation in Mexico City, and then other trucks belonging to other companies in the days that followed. "This is interesting. Radical groups in the past have attacked trucks to take money. These Mexican anarchists attack trucks and burn the money."
In one of the largest coordinated police responses in recent Carborough Chapel Hill history, dozens of SWAT team members raided a newly established squat in the 10,000-square-foot Chrysler building. With guns drawn, they blocked off the surrounding street. 8 people were ultimately arrested, likely on trespassing charges or break and entering. A large crowd gathered outside, booing the cops, screaming and vowing to return. 2 town aldermen from Carrboro even took part, ironic considering Carrboro police were involved. On Saturday, November 12th, following the Carrboro Anarchist Book Fair, 50 to 75 people occupied a building that had sat empty for a decade. Participants distributed leaflets proposing that the space should be turned into a social center, serving the community and offering a floor plan of what that could look like. A joyous show and dance party ensued, attended by 100 or more locals of many walks of life. While movies and footage from the Occupy Oakland protests were projected onto the walls, people set up a kitchen, a reading library, and sleeping areas. 2 dozen people stayed overnight, while others sat up outside keeping watch. One sign read, "Stop taking orders, start taking over."
Police are searching for a man who tried to knock down a Ronald Reagan statue Sunday morning. Newport Beach police received a call at about 5:30 a.m. Sunday of a vandalism in progress at Bonita Canyon Sports Park on Bonita Canyon Drive. A witness said a man in dark clothes tried to attach a chain to the base of the statue. The chain was connected to the back of his pickup truck, and he appeared to be trying to pull the statue down. He was then seen fleeing to the Port Streets neighborhood and is still loose.
This day in history. In 1936 in Spain, over 500,000 attend the funeral of the anarchist Buenaventura Durruti in Barcelona. Working closely with his comrades in the FAI and CNT anarchist labor unions, Durruti helped to co-coordinate armed resistance to the military rising of Francisco Franco. On the 24th of July in 1936, Durruti led over 3,000 armed anarchists, later to become known as the Durruti Column, from Barcelona to Zaragoza. After a brief and bloody battle at Caspe in Aragon, they halted at Pina de Ebro. He would be killed in the battle soon thereafter.
And turning to another Occupy movement from 180 years ago. In 1831 in Lyon, France, silk workers continued to revolt. On November 21st, 1831, several hundred weavers tore the then-independent commune of Carrousse. They forced the weavers still at work to close their workshops, hassling the National Guard. Soon after, they erected barricades and marched to Lyon under the black flag. On November 22nd in Lyon, France's second largest city, the workers took hold of the fortified police barracks at Bon Pasteur, pillaging the arsenal and stealing weapons in the process. The National Guard, most of which was recruited from amongst the canuts, changed sides, joining the insurgents. After a bloody battle which caused around 600 casualties, 100 dead, 263 injured on the military side, 69 dead, 140 injured on the civilian side, the insurgents took hold of the town. During the night of November 22nd to November 23rd, General Rojouet, commander of the 7th Division, and Mayor Victor Prunel fled the town. At this point, the leaders of the workers were unsure as to the further course of action, having started the strike with the sole intention of making sure the fixed rate on silk and goods was being applied correctly. A few Republicans in the group insisted on using the momentum to form a governmental committee. The committee did not make any tangible decisions due to a lack of an agenda. Not helping the committee's effectiveness was the canuts' refusal to have their uprisings twisted into political ends. Follow-up revolts continued in 1833 and 1848. You're listening to WESU Middletown, 88.1 FM, all the way to the left of your dial. This is Horizontal Power Hour, your source for anarchist thought, culture, and politics. We'll return with an interview right after these public service announcements.
Up to 50% of the food produced in the United States is wasted each year. Meanwhile, the number of people who experience hunger and food insecurity continues to grow. Food Not Bombs is a worldwide movement that recovers perfectly safe and edible food that would otherwise be thrown out and redistributes it in our communities. For over 15 years, Hartford Food Not Bombs has shared free public meals every Sunday at 3 p.m. in Bushnell Park to protest war, poverty, and hunger. For more information or to get involved, call 860-978-3562. That's 860-978-3562. Or email us at hartfordfnb@gmail.com. Hartford Food Not Bombs. Because food is a right, not a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
For almost 20 years, the Buttonwood Tree Cultural and Performing Arts Center has been supporting the creative endeavors of artists and potential artists of Middletown and beyond by offering the community a facility for self-expression as a performance space, gallery, and bookstore. The Buttonwood Tree provides support to local, regional, and national professional and amateur artists, students, and those interested in exploring their artistic capacity. Located at 605 Main Street in Middletown, directly under the historic Erewhonie Hotel, the Buttonwood Tree functions as a living room to the city, hosting live acoustic bluegrass, jazz, folk, poetry, open mic events, and much more. The Buttonwood Tree is a non-profit organization operated by North End Arts Rising and is supported by the Connecticut Commission on Culture and Tourism and the Middletown Commission on the Arts. You can learn more about the Buttonwood Tree online at buttonwood.org.
This is Horizontal Power Hour on 88.1 WESU FM. Your bottom liners today are Mika and Isabel. Today we're going to be speaking with Linda O'Welligan, a community organizer from Damayan. Damayan Migrant Workers Association is an independent, non-profit, grassroots organization based in New York that upholds and promotes the rights and welfare of Filipino immigrant and migrant workers. It also raises awareness and organizes around issues of immigrant and migrant workers, particularly women domestic workers, to understand and challenge the root cause of their issues. Damayan is a Filipino word that means helping each other. Damayan Workers Association is located at 406 West 40th Street on the third floor in New York. Their phone number is 212-564-6057. You can visit their website at www.damayanmigrants.org.
Damayan is a, Filipino domestic workers-led and run organization. I think that makes us very unique. In the city, there are at least five domestic workers organizations, and there was a New York Domestic Workers Coalition that in New York, right? That was the coalition that campaigned for the Bill of Rights. So Damayan, that's us. We were part of that. So we were part of the, formation and the campaign work that led to the passage of the Bill of Rights. Now, I think what makes us unique is that we are truly a domestic workers-led organization. Of course, there are, two non-workers who are staff here. But our board that meets every other month has also a secretariat, composed of three elected board members, that's excluding me, who meets every week, actually. One in person, 1 week in person. The second week, alternatingly, the second week doing conference calls. This secretariat runs, makes the weekly, everyday decisions of the organization. So, it's really exciting.
Yeah.
Because I think if you just give space to workers, just give them space and the support, they will develop their leadership. So what's our mission? Our mission is two levels. One is immediate, short term, and that's to promote the rights and welfare, needs of the community, because this community is a highly stressed and marginalized community, as you know. So we have a lot of labor issues. So many of us work very long hours with really low pay, especially in these times of crisis. The ones that you find in the suburbs doing live-in, the live-in work, who work at least, the law says, after 44 hours, you are entitled to time and a half pay based on what you really make. That's what the Bill of Rights, says. But it's not the reality, even now in the industry. The reality is live-in workers, domestic workers, work at least, at the average, 50 hours a week. And many of them don't get overtime. Some work as long as 60. The traffic workers work as long as 70, 80 hours. So there's really, really, deep and big labor issues in the industry, and so that's our focus. We run three core programs, and the number one program is the labor program, because that's where, you know, many issues against domestic workers are, you know, happen.
So people might come to you, people who are part of your organization, you help them to not have to be able to be paid overtime.
Yes.
So that means taking legal action, or how does that work?
Yeah, so we have 14 ongoing labor issues, meaning to say unpaid wages, wage theft. So they are, most of them, you know, do 50 hours, 60 hours a week, and they do not receive overtime. Because first, I think the employers, you know, are not aware of the Bill of Rights until now, but many just choose to ignore, you know, because they have been used to the situation where this informal industry is not regulated. Like, you know, they can do whatever they want in their homes. Yeah. So even now that there's that provision of, you know, paying overtime after 44 hours a week, you know, the practice is that, you know, there is wide-scale violation. So there's, you know, really a lot of wage theft in the among the workers. So we do a lot of work along that. So if workers, you know, they only come to us when they, you know, get fired. So that's the time they think about all the abuses they have endured. And so, you know, it's very easy to uncover, you know, that they have, you know, unclaimed money, you know, from their employer. So, yeah. So we do the intake here, and if they have legitimate cases, then we bring them to our network of lawyers. We do not have lawyers here, but we work with many, not many, like, you know, three or four lawyers advocacy groups. So like the Urban Justice Center, the Asian American Legal Defense Fund, the MFY Legal Services. Also, apart from the wage theft, there's increasing number of trafficking cases. So trafficking would be the use of, you know, force, fraud, coercion, whether, you know, implied or real. It's where, you know, our members have experienced their passports, you know, taken away from them, kept, you know, hidden by employers, and they're constantly threatened that, you know, if they misbehave, you know, they would be deported, sent back home, or, you know, detained. So those kind of, you know, harassments and threats are common among, you know, trafficked workers. So they're also very controlled. Like, you know, trafficked workers are not allowed to leave the workplaces. A few of them are being locked inside. Like when the employer, you know, leave the home, she locks it or he locks it, and the worker is inside. So that's really bad, right? Many of them experience really degradation, verbal abuse, really, you know, humiliation, and that's really very traumatizing to our workers, because 82% of Filipino domestic workers here have college education, are professionals in the Philippines. But because of the crisis back home, even the middle class Filipinos choose to migrate, you know, work in service sectors, including domestic work, and some of them are even trafficked. So, and they experience extreme isolation, not only because the home is physically isolated in the suburbs or in the Hamptons, but also because they're, you know, directly instructed by employers not to, you know, socialize. Like, you know, they're not allowed to use the phones, go to friends' homes, etc. There's a deliberate effort to isolate them, you know, from the rest of the Filipino community and the domestic workers organizations, because employers know that they're, you know, violating the law. Like, you know, these workers come with A3, G5 visas. They're diplomatic domestic workers. You know, they have contracts, and, you know, the diplomats or, you know, the consular employees think that they can just violate the contracts, and, you know, have the workers suffer in silence. So now we have, to this day, we have 7 certified trafficking cases. 3 have already obtained their T visas, trafficking visas, which means they have been certified by the FBI. And 2 have already adjusted their T, which is a non-permanent immigration visa, to a green card. So they were able to bring their families over.
So I just wanted to clarify, trafficking could also occur within the United States when you're talking about taking away passports. That's also
that's a surprise, isn't it?
Okay.
Surprising. Even Filipinos are surprised that that happens.
Yeah.
But our first and most celebrated trafficking case is the case of a Filipino nurse in the Philippines who wanted to get a nursing job here, and that went to an agency which is owned by the wife of the Philippine ex-ambassador to the UN. He was the former number one, ambassador, being the, Philippine ambassador to the UN. So that his name is Lauro Baha, right? So that worker, Mary Chubawanan, went to this travel agency, La Bear Agency. Well, I don't know the meaning of that. I think it's French, right? So the owner of that is the, wife of the ambassador. She told her that she can give her a nursing job, but it would cost her. Initially, she was being charged $10,000. Yeah, and then she was able only to mortgage her house and lot for only $250,000, which is $5,000. And she negotiated, and initially the agency agreed, for a deal of, $5,000. But when she came over here, they told her, no, it's $10,000 and you have to pay the rest. That's why for 3 months of her work, oh, by the way, when she got here, she was told, okay, you have to work for us first, work for the ambassador's family. Until you pay your debt of $5,000 more, right? And that's where her nightmare, began. She worked 7 days for 3 months, 7 days a week for 3 months without a day off. She was never paid even a single cent. And she was really verbally abused. When the ambassador would have this, reception, because he's the ambassador, he would entertain, friends, guests. There would be 30, guests in his home at First Avenue here in New York. This worker, when those events happen, does not sleep until, the last silverware is clean, wiped to dry, and went back to the original, storage. All of those, imagine, serving all those courses, setting the table, for 30 people, and from the plates to the glasses to the silver spoon, you have to wash them, and dry them and cook them. So that leaves her 3 hours of sleep when those happen. So so traumatized, she wanted to jump out of the high-rise apartment, because she was not a poor woman in the Philippines. She was a nurse, and then she went into business. But like all other small businesses in the Philippines, that goes down because of the economy, She decided she wants to take a chance overseas, and that's what happened. So she was not allowed to answer the phone also. One time when she was so desperate, she was ready for anything, the phone rang and she grabbed it. It so happened that there was the Filipino woman on the other line. And she told everything. She didn't know this woman. She told everything that was happening with her. And she was just lucky. The woman she was speaking with knew Filipino domestic workers who were our members. And so the problem came to our attention. And that's when we were able to help this domestic worker. So this story, happens. Right now we have 7 of them. We are helping them. We don't really have, huge trafficking fund, you know, to help us. But our community, our members helped them, you know. From the time they escaped, from the day they escaped, our members help in housing, in feeding, giving moral support, looking for work, and even, you know, providing MetroCard. We have almost 800 members. Not all of them are active, but we have a core of about 10% that really attend, you know, most of our events and are very willing to help out whenever they could.
And mostly people in those situations, they hear about it through word of mouth?
Yes. When we were starting, we would go to the parks, you know, where domestic workers are, to the laundromats where they do their laundry. We would go to Filipino restaurants, to the cargo and remittance centers, and more. We've been in this organizing work since 2000, actually since 2000. But we were incorporated in 2003. And so our work already is snowballing in the community, especially with the publicity of our trafficking cases. In addition to our labor program, we had a huge holistic health program where we, you know, attend to immediate health needs in terms of organizing health fairs and doing the basic health and women health screening, providing blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes, and a doctor where the worker can, you know, have a one-on-one consultation. We provide, you know, access to free mammogram and pap smear through, you know, many of the women's health service providers. Yeah, so, but on top of that, we do rights training, how they can access healthcare, even though they do not have health insurance and they are undocumented, with the manual provided us by one of the lawyers groups that, you know, despite those two big issues, they also have, you know, these women still have, you know, health rights to, you know, access healthcare and to be seen not only during emergency, but also, you know, access preventative. So we give those trainings, and then we do limited case management. For example, you know, when there are health-related injuries or cases, especially when they happen in the workplace, you know, like, you know, when one was beaten by a dog of the employer. That's really bad, right? I'm just laughing, I'm sorry. Yeah, one of our members, she was beaten by the dog of her employer. And the first, you know, the employer, who was really a doctor herself, the doctor just, you know, was dismissing the case, not really paying attention to the trauma, to the bills, etc. Because after that, she didn't want to work there anymore. And so she lost her job. And it's not that, you know, she can afford to lose a job. It's because she couldn't work in a place where there's a, you know, dog that will attack you, you know. And so, yeah, so we provided her with a lawyer. She was able to claim some compensation. So, things like those. And then we have the women's rights program. So, that's our third core program, where we do training on domestic violence. Because domestic workers also are harassed based on, you know, their being a woman. Sometimes because they're not, you know, a straight. Because they're, you know, gay, you know, they encounter issues at the workplace. Sometimes not coming from the employers, the parents, coming from the children of the employers who do not know how to deal with, you know, LGBTQ workers in their homes, etc. So we do rights training, especially awareness and how to prevent and how to access help when they're, you know, become victims of domestic violence. Another issue of domestic workers is outside of the workplace, inside their homes here and in the streets, because some workers who are desperate in adjusting their immigration status enter into, you know, vulnerable relationships where, you know, their boyfriends or their husbands treat them as slaves inside the homes, and also think of them as workhorses. Like, you know, they not only clean the homes and provide food on the table for the husband, they also, you know, keep the money in the bank account for the husband to access. So at first, you know, those Filipino domestic workers think it's just, you know, a really, you know, short-term nightmare that they cannot do anything about it. But yes, you can do something about it, of course, yeah. So there's an immigration remedy for those situations, you know. It's called the VAWA, Violence Against Women's Act. So we educate them about it, that, you know, if the situation is really that bad, they can do something. They don't have to be enslaved, you know, that, you know, they can fight for their dignity and their rights and their money, and also, you know, access, you know, immigration remedies to the situation. So, yeah, so we have the support program, but we would like to say that, you know, that's not the center of our work. Our center is organizing. We do this because we want our base, our members, to believe that this organization works for them. That, you know, they're not alone, that we're here to be one with them. But really, our mission is to bring out the best, you know, from them. Because, you know, they're professionals, they're also leaders, not only for their families, but for their communities. These women not only prop up their own families, but literally, you know, because I'm also a domestic worker, we are the lifeline of the Philippine economy. Last year, overseas Filipino workers, the vast majority are domestic workers, sent $20 billion, much more than the direct foreign investments and other countries' investment in the country, much more than what the Philippine president, you know, goes, you know, begs for when he comes here to meet with Obama or, you know, with the Secretary of State. You know, it is us, you know, the workers in foreign countries that's really propping our economy. So just imagine that we are trying to struggle here, you know, bad jobs, no immigration status, supporting family and the country. So what kind of women are these? These are really tough women, you know. So we want to develop their leadership, and we're able to do that. And we have proven that we can do that. In our board, we have 3 trafficking survivors. One is a member of our secretary. You know, when they were entrapped in those trafficking situations, they cannot talk, they just cry, you know, they're always in the corner. But, you know, 3 months or 6 months with us, they're out in the open speaking, you know. We had this labor, migration, and gender conference at Columbia U, and we had one of them, you know, gave a testimonial. We went to the NYU, they were there. So we attend coalition meetings where there's a town hall. That was last Monday, last week. There was an excluded workers town hall meeting with Department of Labor officials, and you know, one of them was facilitating, you know, the Q&A, and the other one also was, you know, she was the one verbalizing, articulating the questions to the officials. Because we were a little late, so we lost our speaking slot. Yeah, so those are our leaders, and we're very excited and very proud of them. So we do that because we connect their struggle to the bigger issues of the country, of the community. We target the very root of the problem, and that is, you know, the domination of our country by global corporations. So that's our framework. We are not, you know, we're very local here in New York, very, very small, but our framework is global. Our analysis is that we don't have to be here. We study there. We had our jobs, professions, and families back home. But if you ever ask us why, you know, we're here, the reason is very obvious. You know, it's economic survival. So the solution lies in our country. So that's why we're part of the movement that says that, you know, the Philippines and other third world countries should, you know, have their genuine independence so that, you know, they can develop their domestic economy, provide jobs, lift the people, you know, from poverty, and allow us, you know, migrant workers to go back home. Yeah, especially now, you know, that we're in the middle of, you know, this crisis in America, where slowly the U.S. is becoming like another third world country. Imagine 9%, you know, having without jobs. That's close to the 11.2% being reported by the Philippine government as our unemployment rate in the country. But that's also a lie. Just like here, it's a lie. It's more than 9%, right? If we look at the Latino and the Black Americans who are unemployed, it would easily become 24% of the population here in New York that are unemployed. In our country, it's much more. It would be, you know, if you consider, you know, all the bad jobs there, they say you're employed if you're doing 1 day, 2 days a week. That's not a job, you know. That's just, you know, something to buy you water and some rice. No fish, no meat, right? Yeah. So that's really a very bad life, you know. In our country, it would be easily 60% unemployed. So that's our analysis. I think if only the corporations will try to live like, you know, average rich Americans, try to be happy with, you know, a lifestyle like that, the world, including our country, will be a better place to live in. Because the reason why there's so much poverty in third world countries like the Philippines is that because the elite in first world countries are super, super rich. They don't know what to do with their money. That doesn't really make you happy, right? It just, you know, consume your life, making money, making more profit. That's not a life, right? So I think, you know, the 99% here, because we identify with the 99%, you know, are living a more worthy life. They only lack, you know, the material resources. And the man is trying to address those. So now we're not trying to be a super organization. We know we're very limited, especially in terms of funding. That's why that's another thing. We do a lot of coalition work. So much coalition work. So if you just wonder how we do these things, we rely on so many volunteers. Our members, they give free labor, especially when we have events. They cook, they set up, they clean up from our events. And I can really say we're a community-supported organization. We also have a big, you know, pool of volunteers from our Filipino youth. We house our one Filipino organization. It's called Ugnayan Linking. Ugnayan, linking the children of the mother. Linking the children to the motherland. So these are mostly children of domestic workers. This is mostly here. That's theirs. Some are second generation Filipino Americans who lost their connection to the motherland, do not understand, you know, what's really going on there, and the struggle of the other half of the community. Because the Filipino community in New York is a little unique. In the sense that it has two faces. One face is that, according to the census, it has an average, it has a median income higher than the average, you know, in New York. And they say Filipinos make more than that, higher. But they're only talking about nurses, physical therapists, you know, the health professionals, you know, the doctors. You know, there's a big, you know, half, you know, the other half of the Filipinos here, who are undocumented, and that's us. The ones who are in the service sectors. Domestic workers, warehouse workers, hotel workers, you know, the unemployed, you know. We do not make, you know, we barely make it, you know, to the poverty level. After sending home money to the Philippines, that's why, where do you find us? You find us in cramped rooms in New York. You know, two, you will be lucky if you find two Filipino domestic workers in one room. You know, the common, you know, setting is four workers splitting up, you know, 800 a room in New York. So 200 a month, you know. That's all they can do. So we had our survey. I will give it to you afterwards. Only 3% of Filipino domestic workers own homes. all the rest are renters. And I forgot how many rent, you know, a full apartment for themselves. The majority are room renters, room sharers. So could you imagine the trauma of that? Coming from a life where you have a home, your own, you know, profession, you're respected, you have dignity, and suddenly you become a domestic worker and live in a house like that. It's very traumatizing, yes. So I think, you know, the level of depression in our community is high, and it is chronic.
Is that something that you address in with the health clinic here?
Sometimes. That's one area we can, but we're very overstretched already. Mm-hmm. The severe situations we send to professionals, you know, social workers, in the mainstream counseling services. We work very closely with Safe Horizons. They're the biggest service providers for trafficking cases. So our traffic cases get those services from them. Other workers also, you know, get services from other groups. Because the lawyers, yeah, they have that. Because mm-hmm. they're bigger organizations, Urban Justice Center has that counseling.
And in terms of coalition building, do you have, do you work with groups back in the Philippines at all? Or is it mostly in New York?
We have this national network here. It's called A Just and Lasting Peace for the Philippines. So in short, we call it Alliance Philippines. So that's how we connect. We have groups in LA and San Francisco and also in Chicago. So four cities under the coalition network here. The problems here are too pressing. Mm-hmm. Our coalition is more here locally in the U.S. So we're part of the National Domestic Workers Alliance. We are an elected member of the National Coordinating Committee. This would be our fourth year. We got elected twice, so 2 years per term. So this is our fourth year. So we're also part of the ANSWER, Act Now to Stop the War and End Racism. And we're part of the Immigrant Communities in Action, which is a local immigrant coalition in Queens. So yes, we try to limit it.
Yeah.
So maybe we can't so that's us.
Because domestic work is in the home, does that change in the home as kind of like this private place? Maybe people feel that they can abuse people's rights more because it's in their home. Do you think
I cannot tell you how, you know, the percentage, but I think it's now in the mainstream, meaning to say it's being talked about. Like the campaign was hugely supported by the Jews for racial and economic justice, Jay Fridge, and they have employers as members. And so these organizers and employers took a higher step, you know, and they organized the hand-in-hand coalition, organizing employers who, you know, are more responsible and mindful and supportive of domestic workers organizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to ask if there's any, in these situations, if you interact at all with the employers or if that's mostly the lawyers that...
Directly, you mean? No. Mm-hmm. It's our network. Because...
Mm-hmm.
They're part of a national campaign. There's this national campaign by our national alliance, the CARE campaign, caring across generations, which is actually a job creation campaign. We're campaigning for 3 million jobs. It's really ambitious. Yeah, but there are so many groups, like the seniors associations, the disabled groups, that are, you know, very excited and wanting to, you know, help this succeed because they need help and we need jobs. So, you know, there's common interest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the employers are part of the campaign too, the hand in hand.
When there's people that come to you with problems, do you interact at all with their employers?
Yes, we try to. That's the first level At our level, we try to write a letter and send it to the employers, to the workers' employer. Mm-hmm. Now, if they don't get intimidated, then we go to our lawyers.
Yeah.
Some of them are decent, you know, when they realize they made a mistake, mm-hmm. they try to correct what they did. But some, you know, especially nowadays, they try to be smart, protect their money. And so, you know, we call our lawyers. But many of our, you know, wage theft, that's just like a process issue. They win, workers win. They take their money back. So it's really a good invitation for other workers to be part of an organization. Because if they just, you know, try, if they just say, I want my money back, you know, we will move and the lawyers move and they get their money. Yeah. The harder, you know, fight are the trafficking cases.
Okay.
So, okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Also, really nice.
Thank
you.
Nice to meet you. Yeah.
You're listening to WESU Middletown, 88.1 FM, all the way to the left of your dial. This has been another episode of Horizontal Power Hour, your source for anarchist thought, culture, and politics. Thanks so much for listening. We hope you'll tune in again for our next show on December 13th at 4 p.m. In the meantime, be sure to join our Facebook page, Horizontal Power Hour. One last song, Try by Sweatshop Union. Thanks so much for tuning in.
I never wanna be the thing you'd hear many say. Like I could've been, I should've been, but never did it anyway. Living day to day, a nickel spent, a penny saved. Feeling homeless, always looking for some change. Change of mind, my mind is gone, I want it back. Drain, wreck, rap, and keep my life on the track. Anyone is everyone, and anything is everything. And no one is a nobody, I know it in my brain. Heard a wise man say, and I'll say it the same. It ain't how many times you fall, but if you get back up and
try hard as you can to understand.
Get up, get out, and get something, and still live up to what I've said. What's important to me is not a fortune, please. Still don't feel I need a Porsche Beamer to fulfill my dreams, cause I remember the reason that I got into this thing in the first place wasn't ever to be rich. All I wanted was to say my piece and make at least enough to have a place to sleep. Till I'm done that, I won't sit down, and I can't quit now. I'm addicted to the drum kits pounding, and now and then it might feel like I'm running in circles. I just gotta keep jumping the hurdles and
try hard as I can.
I got my word and my pride, no job, no credit. Find my one true love, but got codependent. I got no things, I got no image. Got a lot more goals, I'm not close to finish. I got a dream in the pipe, that's it. The drum machine and the mic, the spit. Got a career that made me cheat on my wife. A mistress named life, and I ain't treating her right either. Vice versa, got some tight verses. Hope the first of the month something might surface. It just might, and it might just not. It's a flip of the coin, I suppose. I just gotta
try hard as I can to understand. This running in circles got me wondering.
I don't know why I'm paying in mind. Maybe I'm not.
This has been another episode of Horizontal Power Hour with your hosts, Mika Taliaferro
and Isabel Gauthier.
Thank you so much for listening. As a reminder, you can email us at horizontalpowerhour@wesufm.org.